Welcome to Graph Stuff FM, your audio guide to the graph technology landscape with a focus on Neo4j. My name's Will, and I'm joined in the studio today with our co-host Jason. Hey, Jason.
Hey, Will. Hi, everyone. My name is Jason Koo. I am a developer advocate like Will, and welcome back to a whole new year, a new season of Graph Stuff. In this episode, we're going to structure it in a particular way since we have a lot of stuff to cover here. So we're going to look back at a lot of stuff that came out and happened in 2022, and at a high level, talk about new Neo4j releases, the nodes and the Graph Connect conferences and events and other community contributions that have occurred. And so to break up all this content, we'll basically break up this podcast into thirds, right? The first third, beginner topics, and then the middle, cover intermediate, and then lastly, cover advanced topics. And we'll see how that goes.
Cool. Should be fun. Let's get started talking about some more early stage of your path to discovering graphs in Neo4j, starting by talking about the best way to really get started with graphs in Neo4j, which is the AuraDB free tier. So AuraDB is Neo4j's managed database service. So you can spin up Neo4j instances. And what I like about Aura is there's three tiers to Aura. There's the free tier, which you don't even need to put in a credit card, just get up and running. The professional tier, which is what you use when you have an app that you're ready to deploy and you need a Neo4j database for your application in production. And then there's the enterprise tier, which of course is for the giant mission critical enterprise application that's a bit more customizable and has some additional enterprise features. But for that initial getting started with Neo4j, I think Aura is the best way to go about that, and specifically the free tier of Neo4j Aura. And one of the things that was new in 2022 for Neo4j Aura is the ability to start with sample data sets. So this was something that you may have seen previously in Neo4j Sandbox, being able to spin up a database and choose from a handful of sample data sets with some guides that kind of walk you through how to work with and explore the data. This was added to Aura this year. So there's a handful of those in there. You can spin up things like the movies data set, Stack Overflow data set, things like this. The other thing that was new in the Aura land in 2022 was the GA launch of Aura DS, which is a flavor of Aura geared around data science workflows. So Aura DS includes the graph data science library, which we're going to talk about later on today, but graph data science is basically a way of doing graph algorithms and graph analytics using graph data science in Neo4j. And so now you have that tooling available to you in Aura in the cloud with specific configuration of your Neo4j cluster in a way geared for working with data science, a bit different than application development, which is what you see in AuraDB. So in addition to the three tiers in AuraDB, you have two flavors of Aura: AuraDB for application development and AuraDS for data science. So it's really cool to see that come out. Now, one thing that is really valuable, especially when we're working with data science, is being able to visualize the results of our analysis. And for a while, Neo4j Bloom has been that tool. So what was new in Bloom in 2022, Jason?
For those who haven't used Bloom, Bloom came out in early 2019. And right at the end of 2021, 2.0 came out. And 2.0 came out with quite a number of features. I believe GDS algorithms could be run in Bloom at that time, but it wasn't until I think June of 2022, so last year, that the GDS panel was added so that you could more easily and visually use the graph data science algorithms and see the results. One thing to note about the GDS integration is when you run an algorithm, you don't immediately see its effects. So you have to either click into nodes or relationships to see the scores that were added from the algorithmic outputs, or you turn on the conditional formatting so that you specify how nodes inside the Bloom UI tool change shape or change color based on the algorithmic scores that are handed to it. So 2.0 came out at the end of 21, and now that we're into 23, I think version 2.6 came out just before the end of the year. 2.5 came like in October. 2.6, I think, came out just after the New Year's. But yeah, the biggest thing I think is probably that GDS integration, which allows you to use 7 of the graph data science algorithms. And those algorithms are broken up into 2 broad categories, centrality and community detection algorithms. So you can find things like page rank or finding out which of your nodes are more central to whatever your problem space is or further out in the edges. So to get the GDS integration working, if you use Aura DS right out the gate, it's working for you, right? You don't have to do any configuration. You can just go ahead and use it. But if you are running Neo4j in the desktop application, then you have to first turn on the GDS plugin, and then you have to go to the neo4j.conf file, do a few updates, and then you can use Bloom's GDS panel to actually work some magic. With all the sort of updates with Bloom, there are a number of videos that have been produced throughout the year, but there are a lot of other beginner-related videos that may be of interest for you. Will, do you have any favorite videos in the beginner category?
Yeah, I think my favorite, most concise sort of intro to Neo4j video is definitely Fireship's Neo4j in 100 seconds video. If you're not familiar with Fireship, it's a very popular YouTube channel that covers lots of different technologies in a very compelling and very visual way. So it's a way to level up your skills learning about new technologies with really short videos. Definitely worth a subscription to that YouTube channel. But they did a Neo4j in 100 seconds video that touched on what is Neo4j, what does the query language Cypher look like, what does some of the developer tooling look like, graph algorithms in Neo4j. So that was really compelling just for, it's one, like the visual elements in it, but then also that it's only 100 seconds. So it's a great video to share with folks if you're trying to explain what exactly is Neo4j. For a deeper dive in especially understanding like why Neo4j is so powerful, how does Neo4j achieve things like index-free adjacency? How does Cypher work under the hood, so to speak, is the Under the Hood series that was done by Chris Buren, who's chief architect at Neo4j. And this is a YouTube series. We'll link all these in the show notes. You can find this one on the Neo4j YouTube channel. It does a really good job of going, as it says, under the hood in a lot of depth to understand really how does Neo4j make these optimizations? How is Neo4j so powerful in giving you that super performant graph traversal? Another really interesting video that we saw in 2022 was the Nodes keynote. So Nodes is the Neo4j Online Developer Education Summit, so an online conference for leveling up Neo4j skills and learning about interesting things that people are doing with Neo4j. And the keynote was given by Yale professor Nicholas Christakis, who has written a lot about graphs. He was a co-author of the book Connected, which talked a lot about how graphs influence and are found in everyday life. And this keynote, while it's not sick about Neo4j, I think it was really compelling to show how graphs exist and influence the society around us. So he talks about some of the papers and experiments that his lab has done in most recent years and how graphs and social networks influence human behavior. That was really compelling. So we'll link that in the show notes, but definitely worth checking out as well. In addition to talking about interesting videos that you might be interested in checking out, I want us to highlight at least one question from the Neo4j community forum, I think, for each of these sections that I think would be interesting. If you're not familiar, the Neo4j community forum allows you to post questions or share interesting projects that you're working on, and is an online forum for folks to respond and get discussions going around that. So I took a look at the most viewed and most favorited posts in the community forum in 2022. And the beginner category, I thought this one was really interesting. So the title is How to Get All Connected Nodes and Relationships of a Particular Node. And the thing that I want to highlight in this question that I think became really apparent is, of course, the power of Cypher. So if you're not familiar, Cypher is Neo4j's query language. We draw these ASCII art representations of the graph pattern that we're looking for. This is one of the compelling pieces of working with Neo4j technology. But what was really powerful in this discussion was the use of the variable length path operator. So if you're familiar with how we construct patterns and paths in Cypher, and specifically relationships with square brackets, there's some syntax you can use, basically an asterisk and then a lower and upper bound on the number of relationships, the number of paths to follow. Using that variable length path operator allows you to specify very complex patterns and search for connections when you don't know how many relationships to follow. So that was a cool one. We'll link the question and also the Neo4j community site in the show notes.
Cool. So for those of you who are very comfortable or already aware of the benefits of using a graph database and Neo4j in particular, if you're still having trouble or in the process of trying to decide how to talk to your team or maybe a boss on the benefits of using a graph database on a or future project, one thing I thought was exciting and is worth noting is that last year, Gartner, for the first time in the Cloud Database Management Service Magic Quadrant, added a graph database. So it added Neo4j into that Magic Quadrant, which was the first time any graph database vendor was added to, I believe, any Magic Quadrant. I'll have to double check on that, but it's definitely for the Cloud Management Service. That was the first time. But yeah, we'll put a link to this in the show notes as well. It says a lot when Gartner, which does such a great job of tracking so many different technologies, acknowledges that the graph database space, right, the vendors and the services are now mature enough to include into the sort of top rankings.
Cool. So at this point, you've written some Cypher. Maybe you've used Bloom to explore and visualize the data set. You've played around with some of the sample data sets available in Neo4j Aura, and you're ready to start leveling up. We're going to call this the intermediate section of the podcast. And so I think that question of, okay, where do I go from here? I've worked through some of the guides, some of the sample data sets. How do I level up? I think the next place you turn is Graph Academy, which is Neo4j's online course platform. There are lots of different courses covering lots of different topics, both on application development and data science with Neo4j. And in 2022, there were at least 8 new courses that were added to Graph Academy. I saw there was a new one this week. I feel like there's a new course coming out now almost every week. So this is a really cool platform to work through, get your hands dirty. It has a really neat integration with Neo4j Sandbox. Some of the courses that were introduced in 2022 were Building Neo4j Applications series. So we saw one of these for Java, Go, Python, and .NET, and Node.js. And what I think is interesting about this course is you're building a movie web application called NeoFlix. And the idea basically is to build the backend API for this web application. So you start with the UI for it, and you need to be able to see how to use the Neo4j drivers to be able to build the backend for this movies web app, which is pretty cool. There's some data science courses. There's a Neo4j Graph Data Science certification course, so you can get certified in Neo4j Graph Data Science through Graph Academy. So definitely check out Graph Academy. There are new courses coming. I'm aware of a few in the pipeline that I've seen previews of. So lots of exciting stuff there.
Cool. Some other updates that came out with the UI, besides things like Bloom, is workspaces. So prior to September of last year, the default interface when you signed into Aura database or Aura DS was you would have cards, right, that represented each of your databases. And you had the option of jumping into one of three tools, right? You could jump into the Neo4j browser where you could enter in Cypher commands and interface with the database directly. You could kick off Bloom as one of those tool options. And then the third was turning on the data importer, which I'll talk about in a moment here. But after December, the default new interface is a single workspace. So you can still access each of those tools, but it puts it all under one kind of unified UI umbrella. So that the idea is that you only have to log into the workspace tool once instead of into each individual tool separately. So it kind of makes it more a streamlined workflow. If you did have an older database that you had started prior to December, then database interface will still be that older classic interface. So to update it, you go to your account dropdown, which is basically your profile icon. And when that dropdown appears, you'll have the option of switching over to the workspaces interface or staying with the classic. And I believe you can jump between the two if you so desire. But that is the default now. If you wanted to see more details regarding workspaces in AuraDB, John Stegeman did a great Node's Intro to Workspaces video on it. So we'll link that in the show notes as well. Okay, so the data importer, which is one of those three tools that comes with Aura, is a tool that came out last year. And it is a no-code interface for importing data into a Neo4j instance. So prior, you would use either the APOC commands or you would use a set of cipher commands to load CSV data into your Neo4j instance. It allows you to drop comma-separated files or TSV, tab-separated files, into this web app and then connect it using a graphical interface, which is basically an iteration of the Arrows app, right? So if you haven't used Arrows app before, it's a publicly available graphical application that allows you to quickly data model a graph database. It allows you to quickly put nodes and relationships down and then to visualize the whole thing. Once you're done, you can export that data as a JSON file or export a PDF or an image of it. But you can't convert that into a graph database. So what data import does is it builds on top of that. So you can do this graphical modeling and tie those nodes and relationships and the properties to data from those CSV or TSV documents. Okay, so that's the data import tool in a nutshell. Okay, one thing that is not part of workspaces, maybe in the future, would be GraphQL. Will, can you tell us more about what came out in the GraphQL space last year?
Yeah, so now you've got your data loaded in Neo4j, you're working on developing your application. A great way to expose that data to your application is with the GraphQL API. So GraphQL is this API query language that allows us to work with our application data as a graph. So of course, it makes sense to be building your GraphQL APIs with Neo4j. And to help with that, the Neo4j GraphQL library has been around as a GraphQL integration for a while now. But in 2022, there were some really interesting developments in the world of Neo4j GraphQL. And one of those is similar to some of the ideas in workspaces and the data importer, which are low-code tools, was the introduction of the Neo4j GraphQL toolbox. Now, this is still in beta, but it's available out there. I'll drop a link to it in the show notes. But the basic idea, this is a web application. You point it at a Neo4j database, and it will generate a fully functional GraphQL API just by inspecting your database. And this is powered by the Neo4j GraphQL library, which gives you that functionality for a Node.js GraphQL server application. GraphQL toolbox then allows you to edit and update your GraphQL schema, doing things like adding custom functionality with Cypher, these sorts of things, but really a tool for developing and testing your GraphQL API with writing absolutely zero code. So that's pretty exciting development. The other big feature added to the Neo4j GraphQL library this year was support for subscriptions. So subscriptions are GraphQL's pub/sub or real-time event publishing mechanism. And subscriptions allow you to build applications like around messaging or real-time collaboration, these sorts of things. There was a great demo of this at GraphConnect. So if we mentioned GraphConnect in passing, but we'll say that GraphConnect was our in-person conference in June in Austin. So lots of really great talks available at GraphConnect. The videos are also available, which we'll drop a link to those in the show notes as well. Around GraphConnect, we also had an online hackathon in the time leading up to GraphConnect that was focused around Code Golf. So you may have heard of Code Golf before, is this idea of being able to write a program using the shortest number of lines or the shortest number of characters in your program. So we thought it would be fun to take that idea of Code Golf and apply it to Cypher and Neo4j, but rather than not just writing the shortest queries, but focusing on optimizing queries, so query tuning. And the way that we do this is looking at a metric called DB hits. So if you've ever looked at the query plan for a Cypher query or profiled a Cypher query after it ran, you're trying to optimize and tune the query. The metric that you're trying to optimize typically is called DB hits, which is basically the number of database operations that a given Cypher query does to give you an answer to your question. So the Code Golf Hackathon, this is really fun. We took a Stack Overflow data set, so users, questions, answers, tags, modeled that as a graph. By the way, this is a data set that's available also in Aura as one of those sample data sets I mentioned. But being able to take that Stack Overflow data set and ask questions of the data set using the fewest number of DB hits and writing the shortest Cypher query. So we gave away, I think, over $27,000 was the prize pool for this across three different tiers. So that was super fun. Now, I mentioned Graph Connect and I said some of the videos were available. Jason, you want to tell us a little bit more about some of those Graph Connect videos and your favorites?
Yes, definitely. Now, fortunately, there were quite a few sessions at Graph Connect that kind of relate to Code Golf. So the first one I want to mention is the top 10 Cypher tuning tips and tricks presented by Michael Hunger. So that's a good one. If you're just getting started with Cypher or you've been doing it for a little while and you're wondering why, like, why is my query taking so long or why is it returning me just too much data? So this is a great session on just best practices and things to watch out for. The profile and the explain are covered so that you yourself can figure out how to improve your own queries. Some other good videos and other good sessions that came out of Graph Connect was how to import JSON using Cypher and APOC. So this is really good if you're not wanting to use, say, the data importer and you want to do more script-based importing of data into your Neo4j instance. One of the first things that everyone is going to want to do is import data into your live database. So this is a great recording to go to and take a look at. And that was done by Eric Monk. So we will post a link to that into the show notes as well. The show notes is going to have just a giant heap of links. We might have to add a table of contents to the whole thing later. Okay, so some other recordings that are of interest is the Neo4j driver best practices by David Allen. This one is really good in understanding, or if you're curious to know how the driver kind of works under the hoods in many ways. But even outside of that, there are certain things, certain commands or functions you may run against the driver and expect some result. And you may be wondering, like, why is the result maybe slightly different than what you initially thought? This recording, I definitely recommend, especially if you're coming from Python, because I found David's session to be highly insightful on how to get a little more performance and B, how to avoid some very common pitfalls that we see with implementing the driver, at least in the Python space. And I assume it's also in some of the other platforms. Two more videos I'd like to mention. First is Michael Hunger's and Alex Ertl's entire Discovering Aura Free with Fun Datasets series. So pretty much, I think every 2 weeks, they get on, they pull some dataset from someplace, right? Kaggle or some public dataset that's available, pull it into a Neo4j instance. Oh, they do some data modeling, of course, beforehand. And through this whole process, right, Michael and Alex are talking about A, what the end database is going to show them. But they go through the process of pulling in that data set, cleaning it up, and then running a number of different Cypher commands on it. And it's always a very organic experience, right? Like they don't go ahead of time and clean everything up to make this sort of clean running session, right? It's basically a recorded Twitch session. And there's always some road bump in either importing the data, cleaning up or something. And they always work through it. They're constantly running into these like technical speed bumps. And it's fun to watch them noodle around it. And yeah, so if you're doing your own Cypher production or you're working on projects and you also undoubtedly will encounter something, right? Some data that's formatted in some weird way. Watching how they noodle through it is hugely beneficial. The last video I'll mention in our intermediate category is exploring graphs visually with Jupyter Notebooks, which was a Nodes presentation by Sebastian Mueller, who's the CTO at YWorks. So if you're a heavy Jupyter Notebooks user, I think you'll find this plugin that they created a hugely useful. It's very visually appealing. It seems very simple to use. And yeah, I totally recommend that if you're using Jupyter Notebooks and you want to visualize graphs, that, you know, that is a great starting place. Moving on to community blogs. One that I would like to highlight is written by Sexing Huang. The blog that Sexing wrote was Maintain Companion Plant Knowledge Graph in Google Sheets and Neo4j, which at first glance is kind of, wait, what? We're doing a knowledge graph on plant knowledge? So yes, It is exactly that, which if you're into plants and or the scientific word for plants are that, if you're interested in that space, then yes, it is a great piece regarding that. If you're not, like myself, the part that I found most interesting was his combination of using Google Sheets and Neo4j to glean interesting data. So we'll put this link into the show notes as well. Definitely check that out. And another reason I really wanted to highlight this article is that Sexing, he writes quite a few articles, at least on Medium that I've noticed. And he is one of our Neo4j ninjas. And the ninja program, if you haven't heard of it before, is basically a cadre of community folks who are very knowledgeable about Neo4j and graph databases. And they often write about projects they're working on or give insights into different graph-related technologies. They're often in either Discord or on social networks or in Stack Overflow. And they're answering lots of questions. They're running meetups and they are like really community champions, right? And so that we recognize them by adding them or inviting them to our Neo4j Ninja program, which you can apply for. And I think we will add that link in as well too.
So for our intermediate Neo4j community question, one of the highest viewed questions had to do with geocoding. It's called Error When Trying to Invoke Cipher Procedure APOC Spatial Geocode Once. I thought this was an interesting question because it's, first of all, highlighting APOC, which is the standard library for Cypher. It adds a number of procedures and functions to give enhanced functionality to Cypher. Lots of things around things like data import, giving different data structures to work with, these sorts of things. And one of the procedures available in APOC gives you the ability to geocode addresses or information. So geocoding is basically taking a description of a physical place, like an address or the name of a country, the name of a city, something like that, and converting that into a latitude and longitude. Now, geocoding typically uses an external service, and the APOC procedure by default uses OpenStreetMap's Nominatum API. You can also configure it to use the Google Geocoding API and a couple other options as well. And so the solution to this one ended up being a configuration issue. But I thought this one was really interesting, just being able to highlight some of the really cool and useful functionality that APOC brings to Cypher. So definitely check out APOC if you haven't already, and you'll be able to add functions like geocoding, which is something that I use quite frequently. Actually, I've been building up a news knowledge graph of news articles over the last year or so, and I use this APOC geocode procedure to geocode all of the geographic regions mentioned in the news. So definitely very useful. So that brings us to the end of our intermediate section. And the next section is really for the graph pros out there.
Cool. So if you are a pro, if you're an advanced user, I think you will appreciate a lot of the new features that came out with Neo4j 5. So just rattle off a couple of them. So we've got a differential backup that was added, graph pattern matching, which is something you'll definitely hear more about. It allows you to, what's the best way to say it?
I would think of it as a way of moving predicates out of a where clause and moving those predicates into the ASCII art representation of the graph pattern that you're describing.
You described it, I think, perfectly well. But if I recall correctly, like one of the big things of bringing graph pattern matching in was to bring Neo4j Cypher in line up with what will become the future graph query language. Right. And so this part requires some explanation. So there is an ISO working group that has been working on creating a graph query language standard similar to the SQL standard, but for graphs. And it comes in kind of two parts, right? There's the graph query language, which, as far as I know, it currently looks a lot like Cypher. And then also for an SQL pattern graph extension of some sort. There's these two parallel components that this working group is working on. And so they have a 4-year term where they're going from exploring the different query languages to making a final proposal. And so they're halfway through, right? So in 2024, if everything goes to schedule, they will have an ISO standard out for everyone to follow. And the idea is all the graph vendors with query languages will make it compatible with the graph query language. Okay, so outside of graph pattern matching, we have autonomous clustering. Autonomous clustering replaces the former causal clusters. And basically what it does is it allows you to automatically manage database placements, which means where a specific database goes on a server, and allows for horizontal scaling. So the idea is, if you have this master database instance and you have different departments who want access to parts of the graph for their department's use, they can spin those up using autonomous clustering. And so all your different departments can spin up these different instances without causing the main instance or the main cluster a great deal of headache. Now, to use autonomous clustering, it is a breaking change from 4.4x to the new 5. Last thing about autonomous clustering is it's enterprise only, so just be aware of that. There are two options for backing up your database. One is a full backup, which, as you can imagine, is basically you're more or less duplicating your existing database. And the other is a differential backup. The differential backup is very similar, is a diff, right? So if you use Git and you're familiar with how Git works, right, it's recording the deltas, right? Recording the changes from version to version. So when you select backup options with version 5, you now have the option of choosing a differential backup, right? A diff backup, versus doing a full backup every single time. The next great feature in version 5 is the Ops Manager. What's new with that, Will?
Yeah, so the Ops Manager that was introduced in June is really a new product on its own, I suppose. Once you've built your application, you've deployed your Neo4j cluster, the ongoing task is managing your cluster. You want some central tool, some nice UI to be able to do this that wraps up a lot of the administrative procedures and functionality in Neo4j. For a long time, folks may have used Halen from Neo4j Labs to fit this role, but now there's an officially supported Ops Manager tool to be able to administer and manage your Neo4j cluster. And I think there's really four pillars that the Ops Manager, or NOM, the Neo4j Ops Manager, as some folks like to call it, is focused on. And so those four pillars are monitoring. So these are things like being able to look at logs, metrics, basically figure out what is the state of each instance in my cluster. Administration, being able to tweak security settings, different configuration options, things like this. The third pillar is going to be operations. So really being able to automate tasks, things like backups, scheduling upgrades, these sorts of things. And the fourth pillar is this idea of integration. So we want to be able to integrate with third-party tooling like alerting systems, maybe some central IT management system. So we'll link some documentation and a bit more about Ops Manager, but this is a really exciting tool to have for those cases of being able to administer and manage your Neo4j cluster. So we talked a little bit in the first section of this episode about Aura DS, which is the flavor of Aura focused around data science that includes the Graph Data Science Library. And I said we were going to talk a lot more about GDS later in the episode. And so, Jason, do you want to tell us some more about GDS?
Yeah. So a little bit more information. A number of algorithms for the Graph Data Science package was moved from the beta tier to production tier. So five of them: the breadth first search, the depth first search, k-nearest neighbor, and delta stepping and similarity functions. They were all moved from beta to production tier. So now, you know, if you're using those algorithms, you can use them more confidently and know that the APIs attached to them aren't going to be changed. There's not going to be any immediate breaking changes for those. So those are solid. Other information about GDS is the pipeline catalog. So I don't know if this was in a different tier as well before, but anyways, the pipeline catalog is available. So the GDS Python client wasn't made available until last year. So if you're working in a Python application, doing some ML work in Python, you can now access Neo4j's GDS package directly with a Python client. Now, the interesting thing about this is, so we do have a Python client already, and the GDS Python client is built on top of that. So you can actually use either clients to run direct cipher commands, but they'll run slightly different between the two. So in both the GDS Python and the normal Python client, you just put in a string representation of a cipher command into it. What you get back, though, is different, right? So in the normal Python client, you will get back either a list, or usually you get a results object that you have to parse through. But in the GDS Python client, you will get a pandas data frame back. So that's something to be aware of. So if you are not needing to use a data frame, you will have to take the result and convert it to something else. Otherwise, if you are looking for a data frame, that is obviously the way to go. Obviously, as we mentioned before, Aura DS is an option through our cloud services. And last year, we also made Aura DS available as a Google Cloud extension. So if you're running a Google Cloud instance, you can basically just spin up a Neo4j instance with a click of a button. And the last thing I'll mention regarding GDS is an article by Tomas Bratnik. Now, Tomas, if you follow him on Medium, he writes a ton of interesting articles on Medium and specifically about, maybe not specifically, but I see a lot of his Python articles. And so he's got a good one on GDS and Python to improve ML models. So if you're in that space, a data scientist or data engineer, I totally recommend checking out that article of his. Tomas writes a lot of great content. He also does a number of videos, which you can find if you search on YouTube. But in the advanced video highlights realm, I would like to call attention to a video by Dr. Maya Natarajan, who also lives in San Diego. Great person. And Dr. Jesus Barasa did a really good session during Nodes called Universe of Knowledge Graphs. And there's quite a few insights from this, but basically they go through a lot of graph use cases. And one of the great takeaways I thought from Maya was that prior to the pandemic, she mentions that there was a great focus on big data, but the move has moved away from that, right? Especially for knowledge graphs and data, is instead of just getting large amounts of data in very narrow domain spaces, is to actually go to shallow data across a wide range of contexts. And that paradigm enriches ML better, makes it more accurate than having like very deep single domain big data stores. So yeah, lots of great use cases in that session. They talk about finding really big impacts with small dependencies and using pattern matching to find hidden values in the data that you do have.
Another great video that I think we should highlight in the advanced category comes from Advanced Track at Nodes 2022, titled R-Curve Skills and Staffing Recommender. So this was a talk given by Mike Morley and Pete Tunkus at R-Curve in Canada. R-Curve is a geoscience technology consulting company. They do lots of really interesting things working with geospatial data, and they use Neo4j for a big portion of their projects and are really always excited to talk about what they're doing, which is really neat. In this talk, they talked about one of the challenges that they have, which is identifying consultants and finding the right staffing for projects. So they talk about a system that they built that looks at experience, various projects that people have worked on, using graph algorithms to find people that are good fit for various projects that come up, but also building a capacity model. So not just who would be a good fit, but how can we find people that have capacity based on projects that they're working on for building teams in the organization. There's lots of really cool visualization with things like GraphXR for 3D graph visualization, looking at geospatial tooling, using NeoDash as well. So definitely check the recording of this talk out if that at all sounds interesting to you. Moving on to our advanced post in the Neo4j community forum. One of the most viewed posts there that I think fits in the advanced category has to do with the Pregl API for the Neo4j Graph Data Science Library. So Pregl Unsupported Class File Major Version is the title of this one. So what is the Pregl API? Well, the Pregl API basically is a computation model and a Java API that allows you to build your own graph algorithms and then run those in Neo4j alongside the other algorithms that are available by default with the Graph Data Science Library. So if there's some specific graph algorithm that you have a use case for that's not supported by GDS, you can use the Pregl API to implement that yourself. Fun fact, it's called Pregl after the name of the river in Königsberg from the original Bridges of Königsberg problem that was the origin of graph theory. So that's a fun little tidbit there for you.
So that was, I think, a great summary, great encapsulation of all the new and exciting things that happened in 2022. So now looking forward to 2023, what do we think is going to happen in the graph database space? So there's a great interview from Daniel Ng interviewing Jim Weber, who's our chief scientist, and he gave a number of predictions for 2023 and broke down into three broad categories. He was thinking that in general, there's going to be more graph database practitioners. The number of folks using graph databases in general will expand, and the people who are have been using it prior will become more experienced. So we'll have a greater number of experts will emerge in the next few years. But he thought graph data science will grow faster than general graph database use because graph data science makes for better ML prediction. So that sort of growth will be spurned by it. And I definitely agree with Jim Weber in this regard. Like anytime I mention graph data science or graph with ML models, like the amount of engagement, circulation of information is just magnitudes more than when I talk about general graph database features and whatnot. And the last prediction that Jim made was that there will be this continued movement from on-premises or local database instances to cloud managed or cloud available services. Okay, so those were Jim Weber's predictions for 2023. Will, what do you personally think will happen either this year or in the next few years?
Well, I think that what we're going to see is not just more usage of graph databases and graph algorithms with graph data science, like Jim said. But I think the types of users that we're going to see of these technologies is going to expand. And I think that's going to be driven by improvements in these low-code tools that we've talked about already. So we talked about the data science integration in Bloom that allows us to click a couple of buttons, run some graph algorithms, and visualize the results. We talked about GraphQL Toolbox that allows us to build a fully functional GraphQL API without writing any code. We talked about the data importer that allows us to import and model data as a graph, also with just a few button clicks. So I think what we're going to see is moving beyond just developers and data scientists with a background in programming. A term I've seen used to describe these users are citizen developers and citizen data scientists. But I think what that means really is you no longer need to have the skills of working with programming languages, even writing cipher queries to be able to use graph technology to answer the questions that you have of your data, which I think is going to be really, really powerful and is really going to help democratize access to graph technology in 2023.
Totally agree. And along those lines, I'm predicting that graph databases will start to be used more in like more consumer apps, everyday applications that a developer might spin up and like prototype or create some new product with. Whereas I think a lot of the use cases we see now, or at least in the past, was larger companies with huge complex interconnected data problems, and they needed to solve those by putting it into a graph database. But I think what I'm hoping is that we'll see graph databases used in more, you know, just applications that people are just kind of building right out the gate, right? With these sort of low no-code tools, right? Whether it be something low-code like Flutterflow or no-code like Bubble, like to have graph database integrations with those and see those apps become more powerful and more insightful just from changing their or adding a graph database to the mix it's definitely what I hope will happen, but I'm pretty sure it will definitely happen once more people see the benefits of using a graph database to tackle complex problems.
Totally. I'm right with you there. So should we end by talking about some of our favorite picks?
Yes. Yeah. I guess I could go first. I have a couple tools in the Python space that I really like and would like to see continue growing. The first one I'll mention are these two community libraries. One is called Simple and one is called Pypher. So Pypher is the older one. And what it allows is for a Python developer, to Pythonically create a cipher statement and then run that through the Python driver. So Simple does the same thing as well. And I guess one of the major differences between Simple and Pypher is Simple has auto-completion hooks so that right from your IDE, you can get that auto-completion handiness that comes when you're developing very quickly. But Pypher has been around longer, so it has more of the cipher functions already baked in. But both are, as far as I know, they're both open. So you can look at them, you can contribute code to them. So I like using and monitoring those two tools. And most recently, our colleague Adam Cowley, he created a Neo4j VS Code extension that allows you to run Cypher commands directly into a Neo4j database right from VS Code, which is great because when you're developing, oftentimes, especially with a Python driver without one of these extra packages, is you would have to write up the string and test it in Neo4j browser or some other space, make sure that call actually works, and then copy the string representation and put it into your Python functions. But the ability to test the call right from VS Code without having to leave your IDE, great time saver. So I definitely recommend that checking out that extension.
Totally. I love that VS Code extension. That's a really cool one. For me, so I just have one pick that I wanted to highlight, which is the Flat Graph GitHub Action. If you're not familiar with GitHub Actions, they are tools and jobs that run typically when something happens in a GitHub repo. So typically these are used for things like running your tests or deploying your application or running tests when someone opens a new PR. But you can also use them to schedule periodic cron jobs. And the Flat Graph GitHub Action allows you to periodically go out and fetch a JSON or CSV file or hit some API endpoint, and then just use Cypher to define how you want to, say, load that data into an Aura database. And so I have a number of repos running that are using the Flat Graph GitHub Action to import data from, for example, my news graph that I mentioned earlier that I'm building up. I'm fetching the day's news every day to build that up using Flat Graph, or grabbing articles from the Lobster's news aggregator every hour. So it's fun way to have a simple way to handle some basic ETL with GitHub Action and Neo4j Aura.
Nice, cool, great pick. Yeah, GitHub Actions, super, super useful. Kind of one of those like underrated things too. Cool. I did want to, you know, before we sign off, I did want to invite anyone who's listening to subscribe or check out our weekly newsletter that Yolande handles. So she every week spends a lot of effort picking out like the best graph and community related blogs, videos, and she interviews, I think, some of our top ninjas, top community contributors, and gets their insights and puts it into the newsletter. So definitely recommended resource.
Absolutely. Great. This has been a lot of fun. A little look back at 2022 in the world of graphs and Neo4j. It's a little bit of a reboot of the Graph Stuff FM podcast. We're going to try to do these once a month coming up. So definitely hit subscribe or wherever you get your podcasts. Let us know what you think either on Twitter or the Neo4j Discord. And we will see you next time. Thanks a lot, Jason.
Thank you, Will. Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.